Welcome in to Talking Terps, a show which covers University of Maryland basketball and football. Talking Terps is part of BSL Radio. Baltimore Sports and Life is dedicated to analysis and discussion on the Baltimore Orioles, the Baltimore Ravens, and the Terrapins. The site has a team of writers providing coverage of those teams and houses live streaming content weekly. Join the conversations on the message board, like BSL on Facebook, and follow BSL on Twitter.
Welcome into Talking Terps. I'm your host, Zach Kiesel. Talking Terps is brought to you courtesy of Mercer Floor and Home Carpet One. Mercer is a third-generation family business established in 1959 and located on Main Street in beautiful historic downtown Westminster, Maryland of Carroll County. For all of your flooring needs, think Mercer. So Maryland's basketball team continuing to struggle. They open conference play on New Year's Day with a blowout loss to Michigan. But the football team, better news there, followed up a top-notch recruiting class with a hard-fought bowl win over NC State. Pat Donahue couldn't be with us tonight, but I got Mike Popovic here to take everything down. Mike, how's it going, man?
Hey, doing okay. Happy New Year, and I hope everybody had a great holiday season. I know mine was pretty good all in all. Some travel in there as well, and luckily we made it through, and we flew Delta. So we normally fly Southwest. We got lucky that my mother-in-law was with us, so we ended up all flying together to Michigan. So that was a Delta flight. Otherwise, our Southwest flight would have been canceled. We wouldn't have been able to go for a third straight year. So, no, all worked out. And I didn't make it to midnight. It was 10:30, but I got close, Zach. I got close.
Very good. I did. I was very happy that this year I didn't have to watch a single second of the terrible ball drop coverage. I was just able to watch football all the way.
Yeah,
Ohio State misses the field goal as the clock strikes midnight. So good weekend of college football for sure, especially New Year's Eve with those two semifinal games. I think it's the first time we've had two semifinal games that good. I guess that means the college football, the national championship is going to be a terrible blowout game, but we have at least got two semifinals out of it.
Yeah, and look, TCU, everybody's been doubting them all year, and yet they continue to amaze. I mean, I still think Georgia wins it, but 13.5, who knows, maybe TCU covers that, and maybe that 3-3-5 gives another physical football team a tough time like it gave Michigan. But, you know, it's interesting, and we could get into it a little bit. There was some discussion on one of the national shows about the strength of the Big Ten Conference in football this year. But the one thing they didn't seem to bring up in those championship games, just to be brief, is those games were really close, though. And, you know, Ohio State certainly had a chance to win that game. Their best receiver was knocked out in the fourth quarter. That was huge. You know, they're missing another one of their top flight receivers who got hurt early in the year. Was it Jigba Smith? I always get his name mixed up. You know, he got hurt in the Notre Dame game and really never came back for Ohio State. And then Michigan, you know, probably one of the best offenses they faced all year. And yeah, their defense did have a great game. But that said, they were right in that game. And, you know, you take away maybe a bad blitz call here, two pick sixes there, you know, it could be a different game, but they were right there in the game. So it's not as if they got their doors blown out, even though they did lose.
Yeah, I mean, you look at last year, obviously, Michigan getting blown out by Georgia. That could be more could be said about that game regarding the strength conference and the strength of the team. I think at this point you've got the four best teams in college football facing off, and it came down to the wire both times. I think you can say, you know, Big Ten's still strong football wise and you saw Penn State also with a really strong performance in the Rose Bowl against Utah. So, you know, you look around the conference, I think they looked pretty good.
They went, 6-5, I think. I mean, it was a bit of a top-heavy conference this year. But, yeah, Penn State's two losses to Ohio State and Michigan. You know, but I think it's the offenses, though, that you had a lot of challenged offenses in the Big Ten this year where the defenses were pretty good. So that's something. But I think with the Matt Rhule hire at Nebraska, Luke Fickell at Wisconsin, who's usually good, I was going to have to do something. I mean, two of their touchdowns against Kentucky were pick sixes. Supposedly, the transfer McNamara from Michigan to Iowa and Eric Gall, the tight end. But they told McNamara supposedly that I was going to modernize the offense. We'll see if Kirk Ferentz does that. But usually the teams that are strong out of the West weren't this year. But some good coaching hires there, and that ought to help the Big Ten. But look, at the end of the day, the Big Ten has schools that have academic standards. And I think that, you know, outside of and Ohio State's a good school, but they run their athletic program like an SEC program. That would be the one difference. But I would say outside of Ohio State, these programs, they have academic standards. It's not as easy. They're not all the schools are bought into NIL, and the academic standards are much higher. So you can you know, boo and holler all you want about the SEC and maybe the Big Ten and bowl games, but Zach, they're not on the same playing field. And, you know, I kind of get tired of, you know, Feinbaum all the time from ESPN just killing the Big Ten. And it's like, come on, you know that it's not it's same playing field. So,
No doubt. So, obviously, we got the college football national championship next week, but otherwise, college football's wrapped up. We'll touch on Maryland's football, what's been going on the last couple of weeks, and what's about to happen in the next month or so. A little bit later. Do want to touch on basketball first. Don't want to dwell on anything because it's not fun to talk about right now. The basketball team, they won both of their final non-conference games against St. Peter's and UMBC, but then New Year's Day, they started their full conference slate against Michigan and got absolutely obliterated. Came out totally flat, just 13 points in the first half, wound up losing 81-46, shot 27% from the field, 20% from three-point range. They were out-rebounded 49-30. Really nothing positive to take away from that game. How much, Mike, should we be worried about this team? Obviously, the first few weeks of the season, they got all the way up to rank number 13 in the country. Did expectations get too high, or is this a case where the team's playing way below where they should be?
Yeah, I think expectations did get a bit high. That said, we expected them to be competitive in a lot of games. UCLA is a really good team. You're going to have that happen once in a while, but this happened twice. And Michigan's good, but they're not that good. You know, they came off that that loss to Central Michigan. They had some uninspired wins against Ohio and some other teams. Michigan did have a players-only locker room meeting prior to that Maryland game. And so, look, I'm not surprised that Michigan came out and played much better and, you know, got it together. But to that extent, that's problematic. And look, there's no answer for Dickinson. I get that. But still, to allow him to dominate the way that they did, you know, you got to do something there. And it also starts with, you know, better defense on the ball and trying to prevent entry into Dickinson. But the bottom line is this. They shouldn't have been beaten that badly, Zach. It's one thing to say, okay, Michigan, they were really looking to rebound. They had a players-only meeting. They're at home. They turn the calendar page. It's a new year. Okay, let's say they beat Maryland by 15 or 10. Okay, or 12. Okay, but not the way that that happened. That was an historically bad first half. And so now we've seen this twice where they've got their doors blown out. I can understand UCLA to a greater degree. I can't understand Michigan. Is there room for concern? Yeah, a little bit, but I'm not going to go overboard in the sense that Kevin Willard's a really good coach, and I think that, you know, he'll make sure that something like that doesn't happen again. But this team has issues, and they're being brought to light against teams where either it's a bad matchup or the team just has a lot of talent across the board like a UCLA, and now our negative points or our weaknesses, I should say, are really being brought to light more than they were against a schedule where you beat some good teams, you played some good teams, but clearly not quite at the level as UCLA or apparently Michigan, at least for that one game.
Yeah, it seems like their issues in the offensive end have translated to a lack of effort on defense. Because earlier in the year when we saw them running on defense, pressing really hard, creating a lot of turnovers, they were also shooting the ball probably better than anybody expected them to, especially from three.
Which allows them to set up their press, not to interrupt, but yeah.
You're absolutely right. That does allow them to set up press more. But I think we also saw more energy. I think the guys were feeding off of their success on the offensive end, being more willing to play hard on the defensive end. And I think now you're seeing guys like Dante Scott have completely fallen off a cliff shooting the ball. Julian Reese is a mess. Down low, not playing with any sort of strength and not finishing at the rim. And then and then it correlates to the defensive end where you're just not seeing guys play hard. Don Carey, another one, he had basically one good shooting game this year against UMBC. They were hoping that him seeing the ball on the bucket, especially from three, would translate to the Michigan game, and it didn't, not even close. So you're seeing all of these guys, and I just don't think the effort's there on defense when they're not shooting the ball, which isn't good, obviously, but it's also, you know, you can't shoot the ball this poorly. You can't shoot the ball 27% from the field and win no matter how much energy you have on defense. And it's not that they're not getting good looks. They're creating decent looks. At least they have in the last couple weeks. For the most part, they're getting open looks at the basket, especially from long range. They're just not knocking down any of them. And it seems across the board, the entire team, they just have absolutely no confidence. Their confidence has been completely drained.
Yeah, I mean, I think you encapsulated it right there. And you're right. Most of the shots that they've missed have not been open shots. Or excuse me, have been open shots, that is. And they still haven't put them down. And that's a bit concerning, to say the least. But no, I agree pretty much with everything you've said. And there were defensive lapses for sure. In that game against Michigan where guys were beating them down the court and getting wide open looks and things like that. At least compete, contest, bump guys, you know, don't allow slam dunks like that. Don't allow wide open guys. Even UMBC, I mean, UMBC gave them a game for a while. Let's not forget the final game in 22. And they had backdoor cuts and things where it's like, wait a minute, what's going on here? So their defense is now suffering, and it's hard not to think that that's not a result of the poor offense. Absolutely.
And they're struggling, as we figured before coming into the year, they're struggling down low with more physical big men. And Dickinson was just the latest example. But Julian Reese, I mean, even when he is on the floor, which he's not for extended periods of time because he still gets into massive amounts of foul trouble. But when he is on the floor, he just doesn't show the strength that I think that we were expecting from him in his second year. You were expecting, look, coming as a freshman, you don't have as much muscle mass. You understand that a little bit where you're getting pushed around. The second year, you should have put on a lot more muscle and prepared. And I know he's not the tallest guy in the world, but you should at least be able to stand up to some of these guys and not be playing so soft, to be perfectly honest. So
that he's getting into foul trouble, Zach. I mean, and he had foul trouble the other day, two quick ones, and he's not gotten better. And that's where you know, they've got to teach him. I mean, he's got to learn and get better. He's got to be on the floor for this team. And if he's not, it's not going to be good.
And I think he's another guy where he gets really good with lack of success on the offensive end, and it translates to defense with some of the stupid ticky-tack fouls. You know, one of the reasons why he stayed was Willard's assistant coach, Grant Billmeyer, and the success that he's had developing big men. But to this point, we haven't seen it. And now whether that's on Reese, whether that's on Billmeyer, whether it's just still a work in progress across the board, it's hard to say at this point. But, you know, you look towards next year. I know on the boards at BaltimoreSportsAndLife.com, Chris Stoner put out a preview for next year's roster, which is always kind of a futile effort because with the transfer portal, you don't know what the roster is going to look like. But when you start to think about it, you start to think about, well, what guys might leave, because you're always going to have guys departing in the transfer portal. If this continues down the road this way for Reese, I mean, I thought he was a candidate to leave before last year with his sister going to LSU. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibilities that he's a guy that maybe looks for a different situation if he continues to struggle this year.
Yeah, that very well could be. I would hope that, you know, he would give it a fair evaluation. And we don't know with him personally, is it a confidence thing? Is he not getting the right approach from Billmeyer, from the coaching staff to develop him? Is a combination of that? Is it just it's going to take some more time and then he's going to get it? Obviously, when you get in foul trouble and you're not on the floor, Zach, you're lacking getting playing experience. So that doesn't help you when you're just sitting on the bench. He also sat out from an injury situation in that St. Peter's game. Ian Martinez got the start in that one, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so that's another thing to realize here is that he has been hurt the last 2 weeks or so. And I think Willard said recently he missed 12 days of practice. So now a lot of these are issues that we've seen all year and even stretching into last year. We'll see once he's able to practice a little bit more, once we get into the heart of the Big Ten, what he's able to do. They're going to need him tomorrow night as we're recording this on Wednesday night. Tomorrow night they play Rutgers, upset number one Purdue. They got a very talented big man, really strong, 6'11", 260, I think. Who's going to pose issues, and they're going to have to find some way. And look, Julian Reese has got to stay on the floor against him and avoid foul trouble. And we'll see how he's able to do that. But this is going to be another difficult game. The Big Ten's going to be full of difficult games this year. Very strong conference. Doesn't look like one dominant team. It looked like Purdue might have been that dominant team. But Rutgers goes into their house in West Lafayette and upsets them over the week, or I guess Monday night.
Yeah, it's one thing for that to happen in Piscataway, but yeah, to do that at Purdue. Purdue's one of the toughest places to play in the Big Ten. I was really surprised by that. And Matt Painter said, you know, if we ever went to war, we'd stop in New Jersey and pick these guys up. I mean, that's a big-time compliment of the Scarlet Knights and Steve Peichel and what he's done there. So, yeah, it'll be tough. And I guess you can only hope that there'll be an emotional letdown for Rutgers playing Maryland in that game. But, yeah, the Big Ten's tough. And, look, you take a look at the January schedule, Zach, for Maryland and the Big Ten, very difficult. And I think you and I talked in the last podcast, maybe right before the holidays, where I said, let me see the stretch of games. Well, I guess we talked about first that four, you know, the stretch of four really tough games. But ultimately in the Big Ten, let's see how they fare through the first three or four games here in January, where you have to play at Michigan, at Rutgers, and then you've got Ohio State and a couple other
then
really
at Iowa.
At Iowa, right. And yeah, and I think Purdue's in the mix there somewhere as mm-hmm. well. They don't get a break until Nebraska on the 28th, and then I think they finish out the month with Wisconsin or something of that sort. Bottom line is their January schedule is brutal. So we're going to learn a lot about this team. Not by the end of the month. I think we'll learn a lot in the next couple of games, one way or the other, where this team's going to go.
Yeah, and we heard Willard, you heard some quotes from him after the game, and I think I saw earlier today he talked about, you know, he's been through this rebuilding program process before. This is his third time. And he talked about, you know, when you build a roster in basically a month and a half, you don't always know how your team's going to handle adversity, and you're not always able to prepare them as well as you'd like in that limited amount of time. So at this point, we're going to learn a lot about his program building, because you would expect, like, look, okay, you've been blown out of the water twice. You're really struggling to shoot the ball. You're really struggling with your energy. He says they practiced hard this week. We'll see how that translates against Rutgers. But then as the year goes on, can you incrementally improve each month, each few weeks, to where you're better, you look better and are playing better against top-notch competition at the end of the year than you did at the beginning of conference play? And that, I think, will tell us a lot about Kevin Willard and his staff going into next year, which is going to be important for him. He gets his first true recruiting class in and the opportunity to really go after the portal with a lot of time to build his team for next season.
I tell you one thing, which is kind of obvious. I know college basketball has evolved to a lot of, you know, three out, two in, or really four out, one in, a lot of three-point shooting and such, where the post-up big men, that seems to be a relic. Yeah, well, the Big Ten still seems to have a lot of teams that at least has that one big man that's pretty damn good that, you know what, you need a big man too, and you need those guys in the front court to do some dirty work, to get some rebounds, to play some defense, to set some screens. So say all you will about the new basketball era of today, where it's all guard-oriented and shoot the three and there's no inside play. Well, that ain't exactly true. You still need some of those guys.
Yeah, and look, that ought to give you a little bit of a leg up, at least in recruiting. With all of these other conferences going small, there's still big guys out there available, really talented big guys available. And when there's really only one conference that they can really play in and get a ton of minutes, that ought to give you a little bit of a leg up. We'll see how Willard and his staff are able to attack that recruiting-wise. But let's shift gears to football, a little bit more positive. The team won the Dukes Mayo Bowl 16-12. A very strong defensive performance. It was a defensive game, culminated in a mayonnaise bath for Mike Locksley, which is always fun. But 8 wins for the first time since 2010 and back-to-back bowl wins for the first time since 2002-03. So, Mike, that's a really significant development for this team, and I know I've talked about it a lot over the last year. It's about raising the floor of this program. The ceiling probably is where it is, where you have a special year every few years, but the floor to this point has been 2 or 3 wins a year, where you're having that, you're having seasons like that. This is about raising that floor to 5 to 7 wins, and to this point, it seems like Mike Locksley, they're headed in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this over and over again, and we've kind of gone through the schedule and where they could have played better, a game they should have won. We talk about Purdue constantly And obviously they had a tough showing against LSU, but that's LSU. But Zach, you're absolutely right. People really do have to put this program in the proper context and look where it was when Locksley took over. The fact now that he's built something a couple of consecutive years and you showed some incremental increase in progress this season. Yeah, I think you would have liked to have had one more win, but they pretty much did everything that we had hoped they would this year. And look, even if you, let's say they win that Wisconsin game or win that Penn State game, maybe they don't play Michigan or Ohio State tough. Maybe they could get blown out of those games. So, yeah, at the end of the day, yeah, they made progress from last year to this. We would have liked to have seen one more win, but look, 8 wins, you went through the records and all that. And, you know, to get that bowl win. And look, both teams had guys that were out. I mean, yes, NC State was starting a quarterback. It was only a second start. They were missing, I think, their center and left guard. But Maryland was missing 3 of their best top receivers, their starting tight end who's going to Alabama. They're missing one of their starting corners. You know, Maryland certainly had a number of key guys that were out for them as well. So for them to come away and get that win was big. And look, against NC State's defense, they moved the ball enough. They got enough third down conversions. They ate up enough time to at least keep NC State off the field. And Maryland did just enough. I think you knew points were going to be hard to come by. I think it would have been nice if Maryland had gotten 20. I don't know that that would have been too – I don't think that was to ask too much of them. But then again, NC State, I think, was giving up 19 points a game. Would have liked to maybe gotten 20, but they did what they needed to do. You knew it was going to be a tough game because of the top-ranked defense that NC State had in the country. And they found a way. They found a way to get it done. I think that's great. And the defense did have a solid game throughout. So to come away with that, I think if they had lost that game, Zach, I think we may have had a much different feeling then on this season. But now after that, and you really step back, have had some time to breathe, Locksley has to go in the right direction. We'll talk more about next season in just a second. But I hope fans realize that. I think that's just the question mark, Zach, is are fans looking at the finish to the season at 7-5 and saying, oh, well, this team should have been 9-3 or 10-2, which I think is ridiculous. But do they realize, though, that this program is leaps and bounds in better shape than it was?
Yeah, it takes a lot of time to build a program from what Maryland was to a consistent consistent winner, where you're having winning seasons or at least 500 seasons. It's a lot of work. I think when you look at before last season, the goal was get to a bowl game because they hadn't been to a bowl game in a while. And it was the goal was get to a bowl game, and they did that. And then this year it was get to a bowl game and compete better against the Blue Bloods. And competitive games against Ohio State and Michigan, I think that counts. Now, were there missed opportunities along the way? Absolutely. The Wisconsin and Penn State games were ugly as hell. And then you've got the Purdue game, which is a massive missed opportunity. 0 points off 3 turnovers at the defense force. So we've talked about that ad nauseum, but at the end of the day, 8 wins and then basically 1 possession games. I know the Ohio State game at the end, but within the last couple minutes, they had a chance to win both games against Michigan on the road and home against Ohio State. Do you look at that and you look towards next year and you say, okay, the goal is bowl game again, obviously, but then win one of those games. You got to be able to win one of them. I think that's sort of what you're looking at as the goal towards next season. It's incremental steps, but with each season that you put together like this, you're raising the floor of the program, which is a big deal. And I think you're seeing it on the recruiting trail. You know, Locksley's always been able to recruit, but now even with NIL and Maryland obviously not being nearly as strong as they probably should be, as far as that stuff goes, they're still putting together top 30 classes. So that's significant. Before we talk about next year, I do want to give kudos to Brian Williams, defensive coordinator. Maryland didn't allow a touchdown in either of their final 2 games of the year. Just 27 rushing yards they allowed NC State.
Them very one-dimensional. Yeah.
Yeah. 5 of 18, NC State was on. It's the first time Maryland hasn't allowed a touchdown in a bowl game since 2002, Peach Bowl against Tennessee. And then also kudos to Chad Ryland, made 3 field goals, 45, 42, and 33. That's significant, and obviously he'll be headed to the NFL Combine. He just got an invite, so a good final game for him in a Maryland uniform.
Yeah, and Zach, you thought that, and that was one of my keys to the game on the network broadcast on the radio, was that I think Chad Ryland may play a big part in this game, because knowing how good NC State's defense is, he may be called upon to kick some long field goals because Maryland either can't get into the red zone, or they're just knocking on it but can't get in, or they get in the red zone, and because of the Wolfpack's defense, they can't get points. But he hit some long ones outside of the red zone, or right there on the border of the red zone, and helped get the job done for Maryland. And that game played out mostly like I thought it would. I think the question was going to be how good it was NC State's D or offense going to be or not be in that game. Again, we could talk about players they were missing. How about guys that we were missing as well that would have stressed their defense further than what it was? And I think, too, the quality of win against NC State this year is better because you had the same head coach, you had the same defense, not all the offense, but a decent portion of it. Let's be honest, the Virginia Tech win in the Pinstripe Bowl, that's a Tech team with a coaching change. They were down to a third or fourth string quarterback. Their roster was massively different than it was earlier in the year. And so it's not Maryland's fault. They came, they played hard, they didn't mess around, they got the job done, and they did it in dominant fashion. But this NC State win, this bowl win, much more, I think, in the way of significant and a better quality win than it was last year.
Yeah, look, let's be real about it. This is an NC State team that was ranked 23rd in the college football playoff rankings.
Yeah.
This is the first time Maryland has ever beaten a college football playoff ranked team since the playoff was invented in 2014. So this is a big deal.
And that was a Maryland, home game. That was a home game for NC State.
It absolutely was. And there were a lot of Maryland fans, but I mean, it's right there in Charlotte. Yeah. So absolutely. So a good win. And I think you would agree with me, a successful season.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Zach. Overall.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. So let's look towards next year a little bit, because recruiting is obviously underway. Our last episode we recorded just before National Signing Day, Maryland was able to, finish up with currently, because obviously things are still going on. Currently the number 33 class in the country, number 6 in the Big Ten. The transfer class is 16th in the country, number 3 in the Big Ten. They've definitely added more than they've lost in the portal. Really haven't lost a whole lot of significance other than you mentioned CJ Dupree, the tight end, going to Alabama. But otherwise, they've been able to add a lot. They just added today former four-star receiver Caden Prather from West Virginia. He's a local product. Also added former four-star receiver Tyrese Chambers from FIU, who was thinking about transferring before last year but stayed down there for this year. He'll be here this year as well. So big additions in the transfer portal. And then the freshman class got a few late additions, mostly edge rushers. 3 4-star edge rushers, Rico Walker, Dylan Gooden, and Neo Avery, who flipped last minute from Ole Miss, which I know Lane Kiffin wasn't very happy about on Twitter. But these are all guys, you know, you look at positions of need, they lost a lot of pass rushers. They really didn't have a great way of replacing Demian Robinson when he left last year for Penn State. They struggled getting home as far as a pass rush with 4 rushers. It's something they want to do more. These are 3 really talented edge rushers that they added and bolstered the receiving class, who obviously lost a lot with Dante Demas, Jacob Copeland, and Rakim Jarrett all gone.
Yeah, and the good thing in the bowl game was that the young guys that were still there, they got a chance to get valuable reps, extra practice, and play in a meaningful game, so that when they strap it up against Towson and Virginia and those teams, when the non-conference portion kicks off their schedule later this year, that's going to be really valuable for them. Excuse me, from the bowl experience. But they had some guys there that stepped up and were there and played in that NC State game. But you're right, adding a guy like Prather is a huge help. And let's not forget as well, you know, in terms of the transfer portal, taking a look, I mean, I think the Jaquan Shepherd corner from Cincinnati, yeah, I think that's a big pickup. You know, Jordan Phillips from Tennessee, the defensive lineman, and Marcus Dumervil from LSU. You know, anytime you've got guys that are at SEC schools that transfer to a school like Maryland, you do wonder a little bit about, okay, what's, you know, are they going to disappoint us? Are they really going to be that kind of caliber player? But they're getting a second chance. And obviously, Loxley has to take some chances But that said, these guys were highly touted coming out of high school and picked up by these schools. And sometimes just a change of scenery is what they need and a new lease on life. And you know, it's worth the shot. And Maryland's got to take him. I mean, especially in the trenches. But you mentioned the edge rushers. Yeah. And you think about that, too, like a guy like Chop Robinson. Maybe he's the difference between Maryland beating Michigan in the beginning of the season or not.
Yeah.
Maybe he's the difference in that Purdue game where even though the defense forced three straight turnovers, maybe he forces a turnover and gets the ball himself. But a guy like that, you know, goes to Penn State. But, Zach, I keep saying it. A guy like that stays at home and plays at Maryland, he could be the difference between an 8-9 win team. And you think Chop Robinson would be unhappy playing for a 9-3 Maryland team going to a bowl game? I mean, that's where these guys got to figure it out that, look, I understand it's their decision, it's their life, it's their career, but that's where if you stay home, Maryland will be better. You know, you go to Penn State, they've already got a bunch of good guys, and yeah, you may shine, but why can't you shine at Maryland and make your hometown home state school do really well? I don't get that.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like the recruiting pitch is working for the most part. You are, I guess, always going to have guys like that who want to do it on a bigger stage. And you really can't do anything about that if you're Maryland. You're never going to be Penn State as a program. You're never going to be that. So putting that aside, your goal is to create a program within yourself full of guys who do want to stay home and do want to show off for their hometown. And it seems like they're starting to build, you know, Loxley's first recruiting class or so, he was still making inroads. Obviously, a lot of damage had been done with the Jordan McNair situation. He got a lot of guys from Florida, various places. But now you look at this class, it's full of guys who are either staying home as freshmen or they're coming back home from other places like West Virginia, like Tennessee, like LSU, and FIU. So you're seeing a lot of these guys just coming home, and that's exactly the blueprint success that we've talked about forever, and Loxley's been able to follow it.
Look, I tell you something, Zach. This transfer portal changes a lot, and you take a look, and I posted this on my personal Facebook page earlier today when that news came out about Prather, is that Loxley is a good recruiter, and he may lose out in the DMV to some top-tier guys initially, but be in the final running, though, okay, and have a relationship with these guys. And a certain amount of these guys are going to go to the school of their choice and do well, but a certain amount are going to go, and whether it be a coaching change, whether it be a bad fit, whether it be maybe an injury, whether it be that, hey, they're good, but there's just too many guys in front of them. They can't quite get over the hump there to play enough. Loxley could get these guys now to come to Maryland and play, and that's where this portal, at least for a year, that's where this portal could really be something where, look, you may miss out on a four or five-star guy in the DMV now to a Penn State or to a Tennessee or LSU, but that doesn't mean that guy may not be on the roster next season for you. And so given the fact that Mike is good at recruiting and relationships in the DMV, it may very well be that we end up getting these guys. It's really not even their seconds. It's just that we end up getting these guys. It's just not right away. And okay, you know, I mean, hopefully, though, these guys then come and they pan out. I mean, that's going to be the tell-all.
Yeah.
But things have changed a lot. So, hey, you know, that's where this news today with Prather is it's a new lease on life, I guess they would say.
Yeah, last year when we saw all of those departures, whether it was Terrence Lewis or Brandon Jennings or Jimmy and Robinson, Loxley said, well, the portal giveth and the portal taketh away. Last year, it probably took away more than it gave, but it sure gave this year number 16 recruiting or transfer class in the country. And look, they're not done. I mean, they're in the running for a high-ranked offensive tackle that they're looking at least one. I think they're trying to add two starting quality offensive linemen in the portal. There's another corner as well that they're looking at. So there's a lot of guys that they're still in the running for, and they're not done adding to this class.
I mean, Zach, we talked about this team with 15 starters coming back for this season or this past season now, and high expectations, and we just talked about it was a good season. Would have liked to got one more win, but all in all, you know, they took a step forward in 22 from 21. Could this team in 23 potentially, though, on paper at least, be better than this 22 team. I'm getting that feeling right now that that very well could be the case. And, man, if this defense has a couple of pass rushers that they haven't had in the entire time that really Loxley's been here, they haven't had a consistent pass rush defensively without blitzing. Wow. I mean, you wonder, you know, and that's where could this 23 team on paper at least be better than the 22 team?
Well, I mean, I had been saying all year that I thought 2023 was going to be more of a retooling year. Yeah. On paper, it looked like Tagovailoa was going to be gone. All the receivers were going to be gone. A lot of the offensive line, a lot of the defensive line. But then you look at, okay, it looks like Talia is going to be back. It's not official, but it's all but official at this point. He's going to be back. You're going to get Jayshon Jones back. So you're getting a number one receiver. He showed that all year. He can be a number one. And then you're getting Chambers and Prather to go along with Ty Felton, Octavian Smith, who right. showed out in the bowl game, right. both as a kick returner and as a receiver. Yeah, what a catch in the corner of the end zone
Shalik
there.
Shalik Knotts, you know.
Absolutely, Shalik Knotts, who was a four-star guy. So you've got, now it's like, well, you got plenty of receivers, and now you look at tight end, Corey Dyche just comes back, and then you're looking at, well, Nicholas Harbor, it looks like Maryland might be the team to beat for him, the five-star guy, and it looks like Maryland is recruiting him as a tight end. Some teams he can play edge, but it looks like they're going to be looking at him as a tight end. He's going to be announcing on February 1st. It looked like Michigan was in pretty strong position to land him with Jim Harbaugh being 1 foot out the door. Sounds like that's not the case. And now you look at apparently Shane Beamer's little whiny episodes as far as recruiting the last few weeks. That hasn't gone over well with a number of guys, including Harbor. So now it looks like Oregon has jumped into the mix. They've got a very strong track team. We've talked about Harbor's desire to run Olympic track. So it looks like it might come down to Maryland versus Oregon, Under Armour versus Nike. And we'll see what happens there. But you add him to the mix, along with some starting quality offensive linemen in the portal. And we haven't even mentioned the defensive side. And the defense has really improved this year under Brian Williams. So across the board, I agree with you. I think next year, you looked at it as maybe a retooling year before 2022 started. I'm not looking at it that way anymore. I think they can absolutely take yet another step forward in 2023.
Well, and I guess what we're forgetting is that, well, I think we're forgetting maybe the portal and how powerful it can be. And it's still kind of new to us, but that option is huge and it's there and it could be a huge supplement to your recruiting. And you've also got guys in there that have more of a track record and are proven. But I guess the thing we're forgetting is, but we did talk about this at one point, but I guess we've forgotten it a little bit, is that now that Loxley's been able to put together back-to-back winning seasons, one more win this year than last year, and two straight bowl wins, players are now looking at that and saying, okay, wait a minute, 21 was not a fluke. He's done it in 21 and 22. You know, he's a good recruiter. The Jones Hill House is a hell of a facility there. And, okay, you know, it's the Big Ten. It's a Power 5 school. And if you're from the DMV and you tried somewhere else and it didn't work out, now coming home is a lot more appealing than maybe it was initially when you had an LSU or Tennessee calling. So, hey, you know, the track record's starting to be there where guys are saying, yeah, okay, we see the potential. And we also see, though, the work that's been put in and the results on the field the last two seasons. And maybe there's more of a buy-in now than there would have been in 20 or 19 or 18, even prior to Loxley being here, obviously.
So. Yeah, and I think at least for me, looking at NIL, obviously the portal's been around for a couple years now, but looking at the explosion of NIL in the last year and losing a guy like Demian Robinson because of pretty much solely NIL money from Penn State. And I looked at this cycle this year and I said, well, Loxley's a great recruiter. We all know that. He's been able to do a lot of crazy things when Maryland isn't even winning. But we all know Maryland's NIL situation isn't as strong as anyone wants it to be, or at least fans and analysts want it to be. So I was looking at that and saying, well, Loxley will probably put together a decent class, but I don't know that he's going to be able to pull the rabbits out of the hat that he's been able to do in the past. And he's done that. And he's been able to keep guys, too. Really, C.J. Dupree is the only guy who's really left as far as a key contributor. So he's been able to keep guys like Talia, who I know was getting, it's reported he was absolutely getting interest in the portal with NIL, but he's elected. He's either going to stay or go pro. And it sounds like at this point, it's pretty much a done deal. He's coming back, which makes sense. His pro prospects aren't great to begin with. He's a little small and all of that. But
well, he had two bad turnovers in that instance.
He did. He's got a lot of work, and I don't know if he'll ever get there, but, you know, no harm in coming back and solidifying yourself as statistically the best quarterback in Maryland football history.
And you know, that's a crazy thing for just a second, because if he comes back, he obviously is a huge centerpiece. I mean, he's a huge part of next year and the success or lack thereof that the team may have because he leads the offense. You still feel like he can play better. That's the crazy thing. And he still doesn't have that signature win yet as a quarterback in the Big Ten, whether it be a huge non-conference matchup or a Big Ten matchup. I mean, he does have the West Virginia win last year, which was good out of the gate. That's not bad. And WVU had, a pretty good year 2 years ago now, not this past season. But you still feel like there's meat on the bone, if you will, with him. And that's the crazy, scary thing. And if he could actually raise his game a little bit more, boy, who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, and I think you're hoping, you know, this would be his, what, fourth year in the program? I mean, that's crazy to think about it. This was 20, 19, 21, yeah. 22, 23. So fourth year in the program.
He was a redshirt junior this year, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that you would hope that with that much time under his belt in the same system, assuming Danny Nose comes back, which at this point it's the assumption, but who knows as far as coaching changes go, you would hope that he's able to take that next step, get that signature win, really play to the best of his ability. Because I think I agree. I think, you know, you look at, there are still some bad decisions, some questionable stuff. The accuracy, I think, is there for the most part. But I think at times he's not as aggressive as he could or should be, because he's maybe afraid to make the mistakes that he still makes occasionally. So I think maybe the hope is that he's able to take, I think, also a leadership role. When you look at, it's probably going to be a much younger skill position group next year with all of the freshmen coming in. You do have a couple experienced receivers, but really he's going to be the guy. Whereas last year, maybe you were looking at Jared or Demas or Jayshon or whatever. He's going to be the guy offensively. And I think he's always been the unquestioned leader, and they do play hard for him, but the offense is absolutely going to be centered on his ability. And we'll see. He's going to have plenty of weapons once again this year.
Yeah, and I think that with him getting that signature win, and he had a nice game against Ohio State.
Yeah.
And so he has shown what he could do. I think maybe it's stacking within a game, maybe stacking some consistent elite throws. I think maybe that's what we don't see enough of sometimes. And he still can maybe read the entire field better. That maybe he's limited still there to some extent. He still makes some questionable throws, and you saw that why he threw that ball in the end zone against NC State the way he did. I know in that second pick he was pressured, but that ball was not, yeah, that was into a lot of coverage there. Maybe you can understand that a little bit more, but that first one was definitely, there's no excuse for that. But I think it's just maybe within a game stacking elite throws a little bit more consistently there and playing more like in an Ohio State game, and doing that a little bit more consistently. And let's be honest as well. He's had receivers that catch the ball, and there's a lot of yak there. So he's getting a lot of that too, based on receivers who have talent and in space are making plays, or they do such a great job because they're such a threat. At times, these guys are wide open. So you could call it your talent. You can also say some of that scheme, but there have been plenty of times where these guys are wide open. Like, you know, most guys can hit these guys, you know, but I think there's still a level that he could take it to, surprisingly enough. I know the numbers are there, the records, et cetera, but numbers can be misleading. And bottom line is there's no win over Penn State. I'm sorry. Well, he did have in the COVID year. That's true. He did. Amberkin Jarrett had a big game, if you want to point to that. But let's put a COVID year aside. Outside of that, he has not had that win against Ohio State or Michigan or Penn State. Michigan State when they're good, or non-conference. Maybe WVU was the best one you could point to. So that's what we're waiting on.
Yeah, and it's more often that the offense and he comes out flat in those big games. You look at like Iowa this year against Penn State and Wisconsin. So you're right. I think you are looking. I like the elite
bad weather games. He's got to be better in bad weather games.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's the Big Ten. If anything, you could definitely point to Wisconsin and Penn State this year and say he and the center struggled this year in bad weather. Well, yeah, it is Big Ten, as you said. You can't have it.
No, you're going to be going to Michigan in November and December. You got to be able to play well. I think
what happens to Billy Edwards, by the way, if Talia stays?
That's a good point. You know, to this point, we haven't heard anything about transfer portal, but you also don't have the official note from Talia that he's staying. So who knows? Billy is still young.
He's not going to go anywhere else. I don't care. I think he would not go for money. I think with the relationship with Loxley and the fact that he's so entrenched in Maryland, it would be a mistake to just pick it up and go elsewhere for money or for a perceived better situation. I don't see him doing that. If he went pro, that's one thing. I think it's a mistake. I don't see him jumping in the portal and leaving. Billy Edwards, I could see leaving.
You could absolutely. I mean, anytime you have a quarterback who has gotten some playing time and some starts, who showed any level of talent, who's going to be sitting next year, you do look at them as a potential portal destination. We'll see. He is young. He does still have at least a few more years of eligibility after 2023. And he would obviously go into 2024 as the unquestioned starter as long as next year plays out the way we think it will.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, if you're Mike Loxley, the sell is, hey, look, you're the unquestioned starter in 24. Talia has been banged up. He very well could miss some games next season.
Yeah.
Look at the receivers I brought in via the portal. Look at the young guys that are there. You know I'm going to get skilled guys. And we haven't even talked about the running back room with Roman Hemby, who had a hell of a freshman year, but he's back. Littleton's back. I know I'm missing somebody there as well. But they're three backs from this year. They're all back for next season. So, and in 24, I mean, the future's bright that Edwards likely will play some games next season, and he'll be the unquestioned starter with talent around him in 24. That's the sell. Now, whether Absolutely. That's enough, you know, wait and see.
Yeah, and you saw him. He was able to get some playing time this year. They did give him that first drive of the bowl game, which is very interesting. You almost wonder if that's a little nugget, please stay, we'll give you a drive in the bowl game. I don't know. They said they wanted to reward some of the players who had played well in practice. So we'll see. I mean, maybe that's a nod to we're going to give you some – Maybe he'll get some snaps this year in relief of Talia, even when Talia's healthy. I don't know.
I was going to say, could we see him in some packages next season?
I mean, look, I think what we saw from him both against Indiana when he came in and was able to lead the Terps to that comeback victory, and then also against Northwestern when he started, you saw he's much more comfortable running the zone read stuff. Talia is a willing runner, but not like an enthusiastic runner. He'll run if he has to, and he'll run on some design stuff if he has to, but he would much rather throw the ball. I think Billy Edwards is very good at that mesh point, the read option stuff, and he's able to take bigger hits. He lowers your shoulder and gets in there, gets dirty. So that's an element of the offense that they don't really have when Talia's in there, at least not consistently. So yeah, maybe you do see that in certain games, in certain situations. Of course, the old adage, if you have two quarterbacks, you really have zero.
Yeah, and this is crazy talk, but I'll just put my crazy hat on for a second. And I doubt this is even a thought in his mind, but I'll throw it out there. Does Mike Loxley next season say, hey, look, we want to keep Edwards, we need to mix him in, but Talia has been here, he's got his records, he's going to play, but at this point, I don't owe him anymore. I've done everything for him I can. He's got the records. I've gifted him with talent around him at receiver and running back. You know, do I have to be as concerned about his well-being, if you will, at this point going forward? Now, he's not going to go so far as making it open competition, that would be crazy on the surface because of the numbers, the records, and all that. I get it. But first, competition's not a bad thing. But that would never happen. But you just wonder, though, if he feels would he feel a little less inclined to protect Talia next season if he can get Edwards to stay and say, hey, look, Edwards is the future, and he's got time, and you know, maybe Talia's topped out at what he can do, and I don't know. I mean, that's, again, that's crazy hat talk, but I think there may be a little bit of truth or worth the conversation somewhere in there.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's obvious that they like Edwards, but if Loxley's shown one thing over the last few years, it's that he's going to be extremely loyal to Talia. And that's his guy. And they've built the entire offense around him. He brought him in for a reason. I think if he comes back, he's the unquestioned starter, and he gets 95% of the snaps when he's healthy, at least. I think with...
And I think that's all right. Yeah, I mean,
I think with the transfer portal, I think you're less worried about losing a guy like Edwards if that were to happen. Because yeah, if you're Loxley, you say, well, before 2024, I'll just go get a four-star quarterback.
Absolutely.
You were able to do it with Talia. And then, look, they've got some young guys that have been freshmen at that point, will have been in the system for a couple years, whether you're talking about Jaden Sarre or Champ Long, who they added in this class. So maybe one of those guys pans out. I think you can't make your decision based for 2023 based on where are we going to be 2 years from now. You know, you obviously can't make your decision based on that. Just do whatever gets you as many wins as possible.
Where the portal can help, it hurts with depth. And that's the problem there. And so the one thing I'd say about that is that, though, if Talia, who has been banged up, you definitely need to have a guy ready to go. It's not a left field notion that he could miss some games next season because of injury. So do you want to throw your season away because you don't have somebody there that can come in and take advantage of what you have and has some experience? Do you want to take that chance and not be able to build a third straight winning season because Talia is out? I mean, I think that's something, though, that you definitely have to consider. And that's the pitch to Edwards, again, whether, you know, it works or not. But he's going to have to – if Edwards leaves, I don't care who's on the roster. To me, you still try to go and get somebody experienced because you don't want to risk losing what could be a solid season, even if Talia goes down, because you don't have the depth there.
Well, and look, you saw it this year when they added Edwards. They lost. They went into 2021 with basically Eric Najarian, who ended up tearing his rotator cuff, as your backup, a walk-on. And they added Rhys Udinski from VMI. He left before this season. And again, they were left with almost nothing. Yeah. And then they went out and got Billy Edwards. So I think it's been shown that Loxley understands the value of a little bit more talent, a talented backup quarterback. And this year, you look at it, does Maryland win against Indiana and Northwestern without Billy Edwards? Probably not. If Eric Najarian or whoever else, Jaden Sarre as a true freshman, is starting those games or playing, obviously, Talia started the Indiana game but left with injury, do they win those games? Probably not. So he's probably responsible for two victories this season just based on his talent level as a backup quarterback.
Well, and here's a question. If Edwards is healthy enough, you look at that Wisconsin game, is that game different for Maryland? Is their offense a lot more efficient or a lot more productive, I should say, than they were with Talia? I mean, Edwards maybe handles the bad weather better and can run, and they're not worried about it, but he wasn't healthy, and so but maybe that Wisconsin game is completely different.
Yeah. It's a lot of things, but I think the bottom line is a backup quarterback who can come in and win you a game against teams that you're supposed to beat is extremely valuable. And I think if Edwards leaves this season, you're going to see Loxley go add somebody in the portal late in the game. And we saw it didn't really matter with Edwards. He came in pretty late in the season or in the process, and he was able to come in and show what he's about.
Because he had been in spring practice for Wake. Yeah.
So all things to consider. I think things are looking up for football. Hopefully basketball gets things rolling the next few weeks. A lot of big games, big conference games to keep your eyes out on. We all have articles up, BaltimoreSportsAndLife.com. Be sure to join the conversation on the message board. Follow us on Twitter at TalkingTerpsBSL. For my co-host, Mike Popovic, I'm Zach Kiesel. Roll Terps.